And thanks for joining us on Talk of the Rock this week. This month, we've been taking a look at this very interesting kind of crucible moment right now in American history, talking about race and all things about race, but last week we talked about Black Lives Matter, and so continuing that conversation, this week we'll be talking about race with my guests. In the studio with me is Hannah Schull, a local artist and culture bearer. Welcome.
Jemai, thank you.
And on the phone, we have Melissa Borton, the Indigenous Advancement Director for First Alaskans Institute and the Kodiak Village Rep for Alaska Federation of Natives Board. There we go. Melissa, I think you're on now. Welcome.
Jemai, everybody.
So I'm going to just kind of start this kind of broad conversation with a relatively broad question. How would you describe the situation, the racial situation right now? I know it's a big loaded question, but how would you describe it? How are you responding to it? We can start with Hannah here.
It's very multi-leveled, and so I think that it's that has its important elements to it. It's very important what's going on and the movements that are taking place and things that are being brought to light. It's also caused a lot of pain, and people are kind of forced to examine themselves. And so anytime we have something like that going on, there's going to be a multitude of reactions.
Sorry, I'm taking notes. yeah, thank you. Melissa, how about you? How would you describe what's going on right now?
Well, I ditto a lot of what Hannah said. I also think that, you know, what's happening is bringing a lot of the discussions to the forefront, which is good. The downside is none of this is new. Racism has been around forever, pretty much. And it's sad to me that it takes a national, international movement and horrendous acts in order to bring it to the forefront and create discussion, but that's what's happening. Like I said, none of this is new. So it's just bringing the conversation to the front lines right now.
Do you see a connection with Black Lives Matter, this defunding the police, these creating these independent zones in cities, all, you know, this reaction to police brutality. Do you see connection with those conversations and how we talk about Alaska Native issues in regards to race and policy and things like that?
For me, it was really reading the statistics, hearing the stories, and supporting the movement was a real natural thing, because not to take away from the Black Lives Matter movement, but just in the same, it's also falls along the lines of Indigenous lives as well. The same issues that are affecting our African American brothers and sisters are also affecting our Indigenous brothers and sisters, and sometimes at a higher rate, a rate that's not as noticed. And so for me to stand behind the Black Lives Matter movement was just a very natural thing, because the change that's going on is the change that's also going to affect how my children are treated in the future.
Yeah, Melissa.
Yeah, I completely agree. Absolutely. You know, all people of color experience what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement right now. Alaska Natives, I can't quote the statistics, but I believe have the highest rate of police brutality in this state. So it's happening to all people of color. It absolutely intersects with Alaska Native issues.
So I'm going to start, you know, or continue on a little, I guess, with a little pessimism. In what ways are you discouraged by what you're seeing and hearing today? We can start with you, Melissa.
Primarily, I'm discouraged by how our government is handling it, our federal government and our state government. I see a lot of positive discussion happening. I see a lot of education happening with white people and wanting to be allies to the people of color communities. I don't see that coming from the government, and I'm actually seeing the opposite of it. So that is probably the most discouraging to me, is that at a time when we could be really making positive impact in our world and in our nation, our top leaders are not accepting and giving voice to what's happening.
So if I can follow up, what would you like to see? What from the government? What is it that they're not doing?
Well, recognition, policy change. You know, systemic racism is a problem in this country. We can see that in the statues that is now creating a lot of media attention as well. People are starting to take down Confederate statues and then getting the negative press about it too. Well, these are historic statues. We need to leave them up. Why? So we can continue to oppress the people of color that were impacted and now their children. And then the recent legislation about transgender that is hitting the news as well. I'm not totally versed in that, so I don't want to go into details about that that legislation. But it's discouraging to see those kinds of conversations continuing to happen.
Is there kind of an Alaska equivalent to? You mentioned these statues being torn down. Is there an Alaska equivalent, if you feel comfortable answering this question or broaching this topic, is there an equivalent up here to that? What kinds of historic or artistic things need to be dismantled?
Go ahead, Hannah.
Yeah.
Clearly, this is something we have feelings on.
Yes.
The first thing that comes to mind, and I know this is an extremely controversial conversation to have, is the street names that we have. Like Shelikov, he was in charge of the Awak massacre. I mean, right here, our indigenous ancestors were murdered by him, and we celebrate him by naming a street after him. And I know that's history, but it's a history that's not being shared to its full extent. So how can we expect to not only, you know, celebrate him on a sign, but also not share, like, when he came to Alaska, why he came to Alaska, what he did, what happened to the people as far as our populations being numerous around the island with tons and tons of villages, and then at the end of his reign being brought down to 7 villages and our population slashed by way more than half or
right.
3/4.
And I've seen some, just a little bit of discussions on social media about just that, Baranoff and, yes. Yeah. Melissa, what were you going to?
Oh, I just need to echo that. And I'm going to also add, so we've got Rezanov, Shelikov, and Baranoff as far as Kodiak. Yeah. And just kind of on a personal note, when the museum changed its name, and announced it publicly on Facebook, I followed the comments, and people were annoyed that the name change needed to happen. But, you know, in all reality, when we name something after somebody, it should be done, and it is typically done these days in modern times to honor somebody, right? But throughout Alaska, we have names of men who conquered our people, massacred our people, enslaved our people, raped our women. So why do we need to hold them in high regard? We don't name a street after Jeffrey Dahmer, right? I mean, we have modern day serial killers, and we don't do that. It's not good practice, but yet it's okay to keep many of our streets. Sheldon Jackson instituted educational policy to eradicate Alaska Native languages.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we have a college named after him in Sitka. You know, we have a street named after him in Anchorage. So, yeah, there's quite a few in Alaska, and it's actually a little personal project of mine. I'd love to see some of the streets. Well, all of them changed, frankly.
Definitely, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, let's work on that. and, you know, I have conversations with my wife about this all the time because she is kind of, I'm kind of outing her a little bit here, kind of against naming things after people anyway. It's a very, I don't know if it's a Western thing, but it's definitely kind of a male kind of thing also. Maybe it's an opportunity to move beyond that, but still kind of honor. It's just the idea that the great man, you know, is a kind of a Western kind of thing. So in addition to that, what other kinds of tools or language do you think we need to participate in an open, honest conversation about these things right now? Melissa. Sorry, I keep forgetting you're on the phone, and so I should probably, yes, help you out a little bit.
It's okay. I think Hannah and I are both pretty passionate about this, so I'm trying not to mm-hmm. cut her off too and dominate the conversation. I would say educate yourself. There are a ton of books right now that people can read. There are a ton of internet sites that people can read to educate yourself about white privilege, white fragility, racial equity, anti-racist education. The one thing that I would encourage people is not to rely on your friends of color to educate you about racism. Frankly, it's exhausting.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is if you really want to be a true ally, step up and take the initiative to learn on your own, and then you'll be better educated to have those discussions. I would also say educate your children, because there are future generations, and they really are the ones who are going to change the world.
And I'm glad you said that. A real quick plug for This Is Public Radio, so quick plug for Molly of Denali that just mm-hmm. Earned a Peabody, which is huge for children's programming, especially Alaska Native children's programming. Hannah, yes.
Yes, I agree with what Melissa said. I want to echo, you know, Molly of Denali is amazing.
Yes, it's a great show. My son loves it.
It's great. It's great for all races. It's a wonderful way to educate and immerse your children into Indigenous culture throughout Alaska. One of the conversations that recently came up right before all of the protests started was the conversation of how to designate Indigenous people in our area.
Hmm.
And it was brought to me just as a question, because in our school district, we often hear misinformation, but there was a teacher who was referring to our community as the Natives, as opposed to Alaska Native or Indigenous or Aleutic or Suhpiak. And that really got me on this trail of like designators and how important it is to pay the respect to the cultures that you're talking about. And I'm guilty of this too, is generalizing mm-hmm. cultures and generalizing mm-hmm. even as an Indigenous person of Alaska, generalizing Alaska Natives instead of paying attention to like what region they're from and what tribe they're from, what clan they're from. And then was on a feed discussing this and with Indigenous Canadian people, and they were like noting the different words that were considered racist in their area, like Native is considered racist in their area. And so it's important to like pay attention to the designators that you're using, especially if you are educating our children, because you're teaching them how they're supposed to look at the world. You're teaching them how they're supposed to look at, you know, my children, how they're going to refer to their friends. And we've seen throughout the recent times here in Kodiak that children are not always informed correctly on how to designate people or even about the Indigenous people here. And so there's oftentimes unintentional racism that's happening from one child to another. And when I say child, I'm, you know, young, like there was an issue in a kindergarten class all the way up to high school. So we have the opportunity to really form our humans here and really educate. We're rich with culture in this land. We have wonderful resources, the Aleutic Museum, the Kodiak History Museum. We have quite a few artists and culture bearers and linguists and opportunities to get involved in the Aleutic community that are open to everyone. I would just encourage that people take the opportunities that we have to educate and to learn about, you know, whose land we're on right now and how to refer to them.
No, that, and that's, no, that's huge. I think both of you have brought this up. First, do you feel comfortable talking about the effects of white privilege and implicit bias? And if so, you know, how do you see that playing out in our community? You know, even right now, I guess. And it's a tricky thing with language. Again, it's all about language. But I'm an English professor, so of course I think about language. But what do you see the effects and implications, Melissa? What do you think? And I am speaking. I've got to out myself. I am a 40-year-old white male. So my own work, my PhD was in critical race studies and whiteness studies. So I'm very comfortable talking about white privilege. But Melissa, what are your thoughts?
So your the first part of your question was, do you feel comfortable talking about it?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the answer to that question is a yes, and sometimes it's a no. It's in a forum like this, it's a little more comfortable because I'm sitting in my comfortable office and I'm on the phone with one person that I respect completely. And I don't know you, Jared, but
yeah.
I know your wife and I have a ton of respect for your wife. But, you know, if you put me in the auditorium filled with 200-400 people of Kodiak,
mm-hmm.
the answer would be no,
mm-hmm.
because we experience racism and discrimination too. And it's a hard, uncomfortable conversation to have when you're constantly feeling like you're surrounded by people who completely disagree with that belief and understanding, and we're being judged and as a result of it, I guess. So sometimes yes and sometimes no is the answer. And then what was the second part of your question?
Well, and the second part is, if you do feel comfortable, then let's talk about it. How are you seeing it, especially right now, or responding to it?
I'm responding to it by also getting as educated on the issue as I can. I am not an expert in this, and I feel like I'm always continually learning because of my career choice. I know probably more than some people do, but I don't know everything. And I know our Alaska Native history, and I know Native American history far better than I know the Black history. So I'm trying to educate myself as well on those issues and what's happening and staying on top of policy changes and things that we can change. Given the pandemic, we're not really in positions to be having a lot of these conversations anyways. So I think it isolates us from really having greater conversations in restaurants and in coffee shops and things like that. But I'm having some conversations with people at maybe at a small level.
Mm-hmm. Hannah, do you have any thoughts on implicit bias? I know you do, but would you like to share them?
Definitely. I was just backtrack just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Since I started, I opened an art business in 2008 and became accustomed to working around tourists who are not afraid to ask the questions that oftentimes can come up as racist, unknowingly, of course. And then I was under a great mentorship that taught me how to handle those without causing offense and without being offended. So I'm very comfortable discussing it, more comfortable than I think most people would be generally in answering those tough questions. I love to go into classrooms and do that, and with teachers. And as far as the second part of the question, I think that it's really important that we take a moment to educate ourselves, definitely. And like Melissa was saying, I spend a lot of time trying to educate myself as well. And it's a continuing process. You don't ever know everything about a culture, a race, or what's going on. Probably the ignorant statements that I hear mostly come from people who just are unaware and just haven't taken the time or known to take the time to educate themselves about the history. So as far as like how to best handle that, I would definitely encourage the education. I know that in our community, I've heard quite a bit like, oh, we're pretty good. We don't have issues with racism here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
which is the most white privileged thing to
exactly.
say.
Yeah. So that's kind of a tough thing to handle without becoming then offensive or angry yourself. But I just encourage people like, you know, do your research and then really pay attention. Cause once you start to pay attention to those certain statements that are said or how someone treats someone because they are, Alaskan Native as opposed to not Alaskan Native, how the system is treating them. And then you can kind of see a little, it's easy to say, oh, it doesn't exist because it's not happening to me, but it's harder to make yourself learn to pay attention to what's going on to your neighbors and what's around and see the issues in the system that don't affect you, but they do affect your neighbors.
Oh, for sure. I think Melissa brought this up. How has the COVID-19 pandemic exacerbated some of the race-based issues that you see? I know, I don't know all the statistics for Alaska. I do know that people of color and Indigenous peoples in the lower 48 are disproportionately affected by COVID. They're much more likely to be sick and hospitalized than white people are. I don't know there's enough data for Alaska right now, but other than that, you kind of see where I'm going. How do you see the pandemic kind of exacerbating some of these issues? Go for it. Yeah, okay. Go for it, Hannah. Yeah.
As far as the pandemic, I know that one thing that's been brought up that is not talked about a lot, but it has been brought up is the domestic violence that we see.
Right.
In households or that we don't see, but we know is going on. I know that there's a sharp incline in that. And as Indigenous Alaska Natives and Indigenous women, we have the highest rates of domestic violence. It's a shocking statistic to think that as a Alaska Native woman, I'm more likely to be violently abused than I am to graduate college. So with the seclusion that's been brought on by COVID, there's this element of domestic violence that's kind of been further like shoved away, so out of people's faces, and so they don't have to think about it as a problem that's going on. I know that in other areas, I feel like here on Kodiak, my son had to get tested for COVID. He's Alaska Native. It was a very fast and easy transaction. I feel like they took very good care of us. I don't see that as problematic at all. I have heard that other areas, reservations and other tribes down south are being affected quite negatively, and their statistics of death rates and transmission of COVID amongst themselves have been severe. So as far as our local community, I feel our local community is doing a very good job, but I know that is not the case with the Indigenous community around the United States.
Yeah, I think the Navajo Nation has been hit really badly, and then my family comes from Eastern Oklahoma on the Cherokee and Creek reservations there. They're also I follow them, and so they're hit pretty badly too. Melissa, what are your thoughts on what Hannah just talked about and with the pandemic?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts and maybe just a couple of examples of how the pandemic and race are intersecting. I mean, for one, there's a clear lack of respect for our smaller and rural communities and people traveling in, especially this being commercial fishing season.
Right.
You know, we get that the economy has been hit hard. It's hit hard in every industry in our state, but our small communities do not have the resources to handle the virus. And you see statewide just a lack of respect from outsiders wanting to come in because they still want the fish, you know, so they're not listening to the travel bans. They're not listening to the quarantine. And I can't say that specifically for Kodiak, but definitely in some of our much smaller communities. And then another example is, you know, there was, I can't remember if it was the second or third COVID death in the state, but when it hit the news, it was called out that it was an Alaska Native person at the Alaska Native Hospital. And frankly, I believe it was the only death that was identified by race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why do we have to identify those things as race unless you're trying to stigmatize an entire ethnic group?
No, exactly. I mean, that is the essence of white privilege, where, right, the white race identity is the norm, you know. And so, you know, white people aren't raced, but everybody else is raced. And so, no, that's a great example of that. We have about 1 minute left, and so I do want to bring in this last question really quick. Other strategies to talk to people about the race issues that you see, especially with arts. How do the arts play a role in our discourse today, Hannah?
The best thing that I can say, that I can't repeat it enough, you know, educate yourself, do the work, involve yourself in the community. Don't be afraid to ask the hard questions. Make sure, you know, not one Indigenous person speaks for all Indigenous people. Form those relationships. Really get to know where you're living and whose land you're on. There's a lot of programs, a lot of ways to get involved. So, you know, do your due diligence and don't be afraid to get involved with the Indigenous community and learn more.
Okay, Melissa, you got about 15 seconds, the last word.
Okay, so ditto what Hannah said, and also philanthropy. Give to people of color. You know,
yes.
Philanthropy is not equitable with institutions of color. So give to those programs and help them build their education and build their programs and give back to their communities as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It was just, we just skimmed the surface, right? But thank you, Hannah Scholl and Melissa Borton, for joining me today.
Koyana.
Koyana Shinnok.